We're closing in on the final episodes of season one, and I wanted to remind you that this thing does not happen without tension climbing. Not only do they make the best wooden training tools on the planet, but they also took a chance on a completely unproven podcast idea because they believe in the value of history and community. When you use the code STONE, that's STONE, for 10% off at tensionclimbing.com, you're letting them know how much you appreciate that support, and it helps us let them know that it was a good investment. So please, head to tensionclimbing.com, tell them thanks, and thank you for your support. Tensionclimbing.com, mastery over success. The 1990s, in the world of sports, was star-studded. Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, Mike Tyson, Derek Jeter, Michelle Kwan, they all created names for themselves that transcended their sports. They won championships, set records, and pushed the boundaries of the games they played. Even in the much smaller world of rock climbing, household names, or, you know, maybe apartment hold or tent hold or camp four hold names, were on the rise in a new era of competitions, boulders, and first free ascents. Lynn Hill, Wolfgang Gulich, Ben Moon, Boone Speed, Katie Brown. What makes all these stars even more impressive, of course, is that as they played their games and blazed their trails and carved out lanes for themselves, they did so on weekends and holidays, over PTO trips and the occasional half day here and there. Then they went back to their office jobs and... what? This can't be right. Who wrote this? Hold on a second. Let me check my notes here. Right. Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, turns out Michael Jordan wasn't leading the Chicago Bulls to their sixth championship while putting in 40 hours as a sales rep somewhere. Mike Tyson wasn't also your bank teller, thank goodness for that. Derek Jeter didn't have to go to HR for time off to practice his swing, and according to what I'm seeing here, most of these climbers, they might not have had big money, but most weren't clocking hours at a 9-to-5 either. Their game? It was their life. They had sponsors and time and resources, or some combination of the three, living off their parents' money or Margaret Thatcher's dole, and the biggest names, even in a still young sport like climbing, were making it work as full-time athletes. Sorry about that. I must have been confusing them all for Yosune Bereziartu. I'm Chris Hampton. You're listening to Written in Stone, climbing's most important ascents. This is season one, the 1990s. One, two.
Música así, FM.
Bienvenido a Rocopop. ¿Cuál es la diferencia entre el sonido de George Michael y el de Wham?
It's 1989. In the living room of a home in Lascaux, a small town in northern Spain's Basque Country, a tall, lean teenager is squared in front of her television, dark eyes wide and glued to the screen. The music bumps through the speakers as the image of a woman fades into view. In hot pink leggings and a quick-draw-laden harness, gates out, by the way, she's pulling over a bulge on a pocketed face. She pauses, cuts feet, and chalks up while dangling from the lip, probably rolling her eyes at the director's lack of understanding, but hey, it's what the people want. Moments later, another woman is shown balancing her way up a vertical face, fighting to maintain her grip on what looks on screen to be, well, nothing. She makes one final lunge and falls, a rope catching her some 20 feet later. She laughs up at the camera, and the narrator begins.
La evolución de la mentalidad y de la técnica en los últimos años han hecho posible unas escaladas que hace muy poco nos hubieran parecido imposibles.
17 and feeling a little rebellious, Yosune Berezi-Artu is completely and utterly absorbed in what she's seeing. At the same time, she's already somewhere else. This is the different thing she needs, an identity that doesn't fit the status quo. She can already see herself on the same Verdon cliffs these women are climbing. She wants to do that, to be there. Part of the series Al Filo de Imposible, The Edge of the Impossible, the film featured Monica Serentil and Miriam Garcia Pascual, a Spanish legend who would disappear on Meru at only 25 years old. Yosune wasn't the only person held in rapt attention by the grace and joy with which these women climbed. Not far away, a 9-year-old boy is watching as well and can't believe his eyes. He'll eventually become a world champion, the first climber to on-site 14C, and a good friend to Yosune. His name is Patxi Usobiaga. And while it would be a few years before Patxi could convince his parents to let him try climbing, Yosune was already an athlete, and she was ready to get started. She knew there must be climbing nearby, as Las Cao is surrounded by mountains and rocky terrain. And just like many generations from the Basque Country, the mountains were in her blood.
"My name is Yosune Berezi-Artu. I'm just an ordinary person like everybody else," she said in a 2007 interview, an easy smile on her face and her hands animatedly gesturing, something of a signature of hers. "That's how I'd like to introduce myself."
And it's fitting, except, of course, for the ways it isn't. And she very quickly took to the sport. In her words, she was like an earthquake, and many climbing partners would comment on the amount of effort she brought to every attempt. In 1992, just 3 years after seeing that documentary, she climbed her first 7C, or 12D, Belle Epoque, at Oñate, a crag she would get to know well. Just 2 years later, she found herself bumping up against a stubborn mental barrier. A route called Hyena, also at Oñate, had captured her attention. At 8A or 13B, it represented something gargantuan in her mind, a crossing into a new level that many climbers never even consider possible. But a few years earlier, she'd met a Basque climber from the next town over, Ricardo Tehi, one of the best in the region. And he'd inspired her to try hard things and to train even harder for it. The calming opposite to her fiery passion, the two were quickly inseparable. She would sometimes try his much harder projects, which allowed her to see the gap that existed between where she was currently climbing and what might be possible. To bookend it, to understand it, to aim for it. And when she sent Hyena in 1994, only 5 years into climbing, the barriers were smashed.
"I was very psyched," she remembers, "because moving up a grade from 7C plus to 8A is very hard. After doing Hyena, 8A, my mind got free, and without pressure, I was capable to climb many 8As really quickly. Even the first 8A plus came relatively easy."
And seemingly just like that, she was in rarefied air. Not many women had climbed this hard. Lynn Hill had kicked off the 1990s with a fast ascent of Jibé Tribou's Masse Critique, introducing women to 8B plus or 14A. But now, in the mid-90s, that's still where the best women were at. Her good friend Iñaki Marco had bolted a route at that same level called Fettuccini and suggested she try it. Riding a wave that seemed unstoppable, she eagerly jumped on.
"He gave me that extra motivation, confidence in myself, and made me realize that I could try that route seriously. And I think that was a magical time for me. At that time, I was already at the level of Fettuccini, so he was right. I did it. But after doing this route, my friends around started telling me, 'Why don't you try the first female 8C?
Yosune, you're definitely strong.
What are you waiting for? Just try it.
It's not a crazy goal for you. You've earned it.
You've got this,' Come on.
Just get on the route already.
You can do this. Yosune, you could be the first.
They say that pressure creates diamonds, but it also has the very real power to destroy. We'll be right back. There are a lot of training boards out there these days. Like, a lot. Some better than others. But the best of all, the one built with mastery in mind, the one designed with purpose at every level, with two different layouts for one hold set, one mirrored and one sprayed, a 50-50 mix of wood and plastic grips, and over 8,000 climbs in the database and growing, is the Tension Board 2. For me, it's not even a question. The TB2 is the one. The mix of wood and plastic allows for skin-friendly, tiny grips, as well as bigger, slopier, open-handed compression climbing. 145 unique shapes, to be exact. And there are four different board sizes, from 10x8 to 12x12. So whether you run a gym, built yourself a training shed, or you're a cellar dweller like those strong Brits in the 1990s, they've got one for you. TensionClimbing.com. Mastery over success. Now let's not forget, Yosune was still working a 9-to-5, selling insurance and investments for a local bank up to 6 days a week, fanatically scheduling to make use of good weather, and allotting climbing trips to her 5 to 6 weeks of vacation time per year, give or take. Now, with that in mind, consider this. In that first year after becoming only the fifth woman in the world to climb 514 with Fettuccini, she did three more 8B pluses in three different areas around Spain and France. And then, as she tended to do, she set her sights toward a bigger challenge. See, a couple of years earlier, in 1995, Swiss climber Elie Chevaux tied in under an 8B plus called Massey Ferguson and fired it first try, on site, becoming the first to do so, and in the process, seemingly widening the performance gap between men and women. This was as hard as women had climbed, and men were now doing it first try? While Yosune preferred to think of herself not as a female climber, but just as a climber, she couldn't help but notice. And she knew that she had the opportunity to start closing that gap.
Hard climbs require a kind of perfectionism, an obsessiveness, an isolation that takes you away from everyday life, Yosune once said. It felt like I was fighting against a barrier, a wall, and more than a physical barrier, it felt like an insurmountable mental barrier. So I trained hard.
Originally inspired by Ricard to train for her objectives, she soon realized that she and her partner had different strengths and weaknesses, so she would come up with her own training schedules. In a 130 square meter room, formerly an old tailoring workshop, she, Ricard, and their friends had created an ever-evolving training space, first making holds from wood and eventually resin. And they started with steep walls, roofs, and caves, and a small campus board inspired by Wolfgang and his training. They soon realized, as many did in the 90s, that the roof wasn't as useful as they'd hoped, and repurposed the wood and holds for less steep terrain. And these walls, covered in holds, many of which she'd made, and a stopwatch, became her constant companions. For two training blocks each year, split into 4-week mesocycles that prioritized one energy system while maintaining the others, she kept it simple, but she worked hard. Sure, they'd still climb outside when the weather was good and time allowed, but the training was all indoors. And the sacrifice was worth it. The things that helped her feel more alive were things that challenged her, and for those, she'd have to train. Gradually lengthening time on the wall, rest, and on the wall again, over and over, all timed, all tracked, all in pursuit of a goal. And this goal, it seemed to be growing bigger and bigger. She couldn't get out of her head what her friends had been saying.
First female AC.
Yosune, you're definitely strong.
What are you waiting for? Just try it.
It's not a crazy goal for you. You've earned it.
You've got this.
Come on. Just get on the route already.
You can do this. Yosune, you could be the first.
It wasn't originally her goal just to be the first. But was it becoming her goal? She wasn't sure. And this wasn't even all about climbing the hardest grades, but she just couldn't shake it. Later, she would say of the reporting of new hard climbs in the magazines,
"It's like the stock quotes on the luminous screens of Wall Street. We almost don't have enough time to know about these sins. It just reminds me of simple, cold, empty data. The difficulty and the high grades have become an exchange coin for some new climbers."
While climbing harder things was certainly important to her, the bigger numbers were just the product of pushing herself to try harder, to do more, to clip the chains. Lost in that Wall Street-like data were the days with friends, the time alone in the mountains, the beauty of it all. Those were the things that mattered most. For her, these goals were personal. The love of the mountains combined with her distinctly Basque perseverance. Like I said before, it was in her blood, literally. The Basque people are, historically, tough. Not exactly a part of Spain, the Basque region is actually an autonomous community in the Pyrenees that speaks their own isolated language, Euskara, which only shares a few words with Spanish and has no clear relatives. The people were shaped culturally and genetically by the fact that since the Iron Age, they remained fairly isolated, not mixing with other European cultures. And despite this, or maybe because of it, they thrived, defending themselves against the Phoenicians, the Greeks, and the Romans, and still today, remaining the same strong, proud people. So yeah, the stubbornness, it was in her blood. And she knew her friends were right. She could do it. And she wanted it.
"I'm a very determined person. If I want something, I don't stop until I get it."
We'll be right back. What's up, everybody? I just wanted to drop in here to say thank you. Projects like this take way too many hours to make, and it just doesn't happen without your support. So whether it's training plans, courses, or products, it's your support of Power Company Climbing, as well as our sponsors here on this show, that has given me the time and motivation to conceptualize and create things like this podcast. So as a thank you, we're offering 20% off of almost everything on our site. Finger files, clippers, apparel, proven plans, ebooks, courses, and more. For details, go to powercompanyclimbing.com/stone. And then use the code STONE, that's STONE, at checkout. Powercompanyclimbing.com. Learn, grow, excel. The siege started, appropriately, back at Oñate. Staring up at the soaring limestone tufas of Honky Tonky for the first time, it's easy to imagine that the powerful current that seems to run through the Basque landscape to the hearts of the Basque people surged within her. It takes her breath away. The climb, with its soaring tufas and huge reaches, is stunning, sure, but it's what it represents that looms even larger. It's a personal breakthrough, but it's also a massive amount of pressure. And as she worked on it, learning its subtleties and meeting the route where it demanded of her, getting closer and closer to the send, the pressure had only grown. As she pulls on her harness, Ricard rummaging through their bags for his belay gear, she thinks back to Hyena and the butterflies she'd felt before her send.
"The situation was very similar," she recalled later.
Only this time, the pressure didn't just stem from the personal jump in the level of climbing. Sending Honky Tonky would be a milestone for women everywhere.
"I was the first woman in the world," she'd later say. "I knew it, and that stressed me a lot."
But not enough to deter this mission. She ties on her chalk bag, eyes ever on the route. She double-checks everything. Ricard calmly situates the rope beneath the first bolt, letting her take her time. For a brief moment, work flickers to mind. There would be a long to-do list of phone calls and meetings come Monday, and it would be a while before she'd have more than weekends or the precision-scheduled weekday again.
"I wish I had more time," she thinks nervously.
But then, just as quickly, shakes it off. Even if she had the option to make climbing her full-time job, she'd long ago decided she wouldn't. She wanted climbing to be a passion, not a responsibility. She wanted it to feel like that first time her grandfather took her into the mountains as a young girl. Simple, free.
"This,"
she resolves as she chalks up and runs through a final check with Ricard,
"is how I want to do this."
Dark brows knit in concentration. Life partner on belay, Yosune pulls into the starting underclings of Honky Tonky. She decisively pinches her way up the first small tufas. Low on the route, her left foot picks unexpectedly. She feels a breath catch.
"Calm down,"
she tells herself.
"Breathe."
Gathering herself in a moment, she places her foot back on and continues marching up the wall as if nothing happened. Moving quickly, her climbing stood in contrast to much of what we understood of movement at the time. In the 90s, most of the strong female climbers, and most male climbers to be honest, valued grace and perfection first, often at the expense of performance. Fred Ruling had discovered the efficiency of momentum where others thought it wasteful and ugly, and young Chris Sharma was about to prove that usefulness, but it hadn't caught on quite yet. Yosune's lap after lap on the steep walls in that old tailor's workshop had shown her that slow and sloth-like wasn't the way. So she dropped knee after knee with quick and confident twists of the hips. Watching today, you might think Adam Ondra took his style directly from the Basque superstar. You might be right. Playing to the strength of her 5'7" height, with one long reach after another, she throws high toes and swings her momentum side to side. The angle is steepening. Between moves, she shakes a long muscular arm until she reaches a left knee bar, long before knee pads became conventional. As she regains some of her strength here, she again remembers the urging of her friends.
"First female AC.
Just try it. Yosune, you're definitely strong.
What are you waiting for?
It's not a crazy.
Come on.
You've earned it."
But now she knows. This is what she wants.
"You can do this."
She isn't doing it just to be the first woman to climb the grade. She's doing it for herself.
"Got this."
For her own personal challenge.
"Yosune, you could be the first."
She pushes the voices out of her mind, opting instead to focus on the here and now, the taste of the pump, the smell of uncertainty. This is what she trains for, what she lives for, what she wanted when she first watched Miriam Garcia Pascual climbing in the Verdon so many years ago. It's in her blood. Knowing she could probably get more back from the knee bar, but also knowing that she's got enough in reserve to get to the next rest, she surges forward. Big pinches, small crimps, and giant moves from underclings lead her upward. Deep drop knees between distant 3D features keep her stuck to the wall. Nearing the top, she patiently and deliberately situates herself into a finicky side pull feature for one final rest, send insurance, at a decent stance, one of the few on the route. As she slows her heart rate and regains her breath, she glances left. A wicked sequence goes that direction into the top of the neighboring root Magic Eye. She imagines herself over there in the double Gastone elevator door crux. It's a grade harder. Maybe someday. Maybe soon. But not today. Today, she turns her attention back to the line right above her and the chains within striking distance. One more chalk. One more deep breath. Yosune Berezyartu leaves the final rest stance and fires the first 8C or 14B ever done by a woman. Just as Lynn Hill had opened the 1990s with an earth-shattering female first, Yosune Berezyartu ends the decade with another groundbreaking moment. One that, in the decade to come, will be recognized as just the beginning of the closing of a performance gap between men and women. But that's another season. Written in Stone is produced by me, Chris Hampton, with help from Riley Rush and Emily Holland from Plugtone Audio, a group of the best, most impactful podcasts in the outdoor industry. At the link in your show notes, you'll find all the things you expect, and probably some you don't, like how you can become a member of the Secret Stoners Club, where you'll find bonus materials and between-season episodes. And look, this show is 100% rooted in the facts, but like Todd Skinner always said, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. This was the final story episode of season one. We've got one more interview left, so if you love what you're hearing, please give us those 5 stars and a glowing review, and tell every single one of your friends, and maybe then we can make a season two, and together we can tell the stories of climbing's most important ascents, one decade at a time. Secret Stoners, we did it. I'm sure you heard that I was a little nasally through some of that, but we did it. We got there. It's not the final episode, but it is the final story of the season, at least for the regular feed. You all, the Secret Stoners, are going to be getting more stories between seasons, certainly not at the pace that I've put them out here, because, man, I am tired. But you're definitely going to be getting stories. I've got several short ones planned that I think are going to be really fun for everybody. One more interview episode to go. I've already recorded it. I've already started editing it. And then we're wrapped. Maybe not, actually. Maybe I'll do a season wrap up, sort of a high level bird's eye overview. Is that a thing? Or am I mixing too many cliched phrases? High level bird's eye overview. That's what we're going to do for a final episode. But that'll probably be a couple of weeks after the final interview. I need my brain to recuperate. It's been a lot of episodes. And thank you, every single one of you, for supporting, for sticking through all of this, for staying after the credits. You know those people in the movie theater? I'm one of those people who hangs around until the credits are done because I don't want to miss whatever little bonus Easter egg is right there at the end. You're that person. You're my people. Thank you for that. Big shout out to Our most recent rock star, Derek Childers. And Derek, this is really interesting. Maybe I pronounced your name correctly. Maybe I pronounced it wrong. I don't know. But it's good timing with the Yosune episode because I have always, my entire life, not known how to say her name. I've said Josuni. I've said Josune. I've said Josun. I've said all sorts of things. I found an interview where she says her name because I saw lots of arguing online, people saying, this is how you pronounce it. No, this is how you pronounce it. Well, I found her saying it. So it's Yosune. That's how she says it, just in case you wanted to know. Anyway, Derek, I didn't know how to pronounce your name. I wasn't sure if it was Childers or Childers. So I texted Lee Smith and I said, Lee, do you pronounce Derek's last name like chill or like child? And he tried to respond to me with just I-L-L, aisle, but I wasn't sure if he was trying to say ill and it just added the apostrophe. So I was like, did you mean for that apostrophe to be there? And he just responded basically with the same thing. And then I sent him a voice note that he couldn't hear, and it was a whole ordeal. I think we got it worked out, though. So if I pronounce your name wrong, blame it on Lee. But otherwise, thank you, Derek, for the support. You know how much I appreciate it. Coming up soon, right after the interview, final interview episode, we're going to have a Secret Stoners giveaway. I've got a couple more of the tension blocks with the written in stone logo that say make history on them. They're so cool. I can't wait to give a couple more people those. I've also got a couple of the books that I used for reference this season, including one that is really beautiful called The Ninth Grade that I've used a lot. And Mountaineers Books was nice enough to send one over. I'm also going to be giving a couple of my books away. And, you know, speaking of books, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag a little early here. And it's a cat that may never materialize, but we hope that it will. We think that it will. We think it's a real cat. Riley and I are considering turning this season into a little paperback book. And maybe every season into a little paperback that has the stories, a little added context, maybe some pieces of the interviews following the stories. Could be a neat little thing. And I like things. I like making things, as evidenced by this podcast that got way out of control. Anyway, that giveaway will be right after the final interview. And that final interview comes next Monday, and it is with another Spanish female climber who is a force of nature and just an all-around incredible person, one of the foremost thinkers on training for climbing, one of the foremost researchers on training for climbing, one of the best Spanish female climbers ever, one of the best Spanish climbers ever. Let's just say that. Eva Lopez will be joining us for the final interview of the season, and I love talking to Eva, so I'm excited for everyone else to hear the interview. She has some really great reverence for Yosune that I really loved picking up from the conversation. So that's next Monday. Like I said, I'm tired. I'm out of here. I got other things to think about this coming week, so I'm going to let my brain rest for the rest of tonight. All of you, thank you. I'll see you next week.